Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. A Juneau Superior Court judge has ruled that Governor Mike Dunleavy did not have the power to extend many of his appointees' terms late last year after the legislature failed to meet to confirm them. Alaska Public Media and KTOO report that the decision stems from a lawsuit the Alaska Legislative Council filed against Dunleavy, saying that he didn't have the power to keep 94 appointees after a December 15th legal deadline because they weren't confirmed by the legislature during the pandemic. The administration argued that the legislature had a constitutional duty to meet to consider the appointments. On Thursday, Judge Philip Pallenberg ruled in favor of the Legislative Council. The decision does not affect whether the appointees can serve now. Dunleavy reappointed them when the new legislature reconvened on January 19th. The council did not ask the court to invalidate the actions taken by the appointees between December 16th and January 18th. Kodiak Republican Senator Gary Stevens, the former council chair, said in a statement that the decision affirms the legislature's confirmation power. The Department of Law says it's disappointed in the ruling. A Fairbanks man is in jail after leading state troopers on a vehicle chase. Troopers report that late Thursday night, 33-year-old Lawrence Perdue was seen driving a vehicle that had been reported stolen at gunpoint a few days earlier. They say Perdue refused to stop and during an ensuing 15-mile pursuit, drove toward oncoming traffic and intentionally rammed two AST patrol vehicles. Troopers say Perdue's vehicle was disabled and he was taken into custody. They say Perdue, who had an outstanding warrant for a probation violation, was charged with assault, reckless endangerment, and other offenses, and jailed at Fairbanks Correctional Center. Three troopers involved in the pursuit were not hurt. Federal aviation safety investigators have closed the book on a 2019 Guardian flight crash that killed three crew members. Coast Alaska reports that the twin-engine medevac plane was en route to the southeast village of Cake to pick up a patient, but during its approach over Frederick Sound, the turboprop inexplicably veered to the right and plummeted more than 2,500 feet in just 14 seconds. A final report recently released by the National Transportation Safety Board says there isn't enough evidence to explain how and why the crash occurred. Most of the wreckage of the King Air 200 was recovered in about 500 feet of water. The bodies of the Juneau-based crew members were never found. That's after extensive efforts by the U.S. Coast Guard and private contractors.
This one was a little bit frustrating for us. It's not for the lack of trying, but unfortunately, it didn't give us any definitive answers of exactly what happened.
NTSB Lead Alaska Investigator Clint Johnson says there was initial hope when the cockpit voice recorder was found.
We were definitely hoping that we were going to be able to glean some information as far as what happened in those last final moments with that cockpit voice recorder. Unfortunately, it did not help us at all.
The recorder hadn't worked since 2015. The three killed in the crash were 63-year-old pilot Patrick Coyle, 43-year-old paramedic Margaret Langston, and 30-year-old nurse Stacy Ray Morse. Morse was more than 6 months pregnant at the time of the crash. Her fiancé filed a wrongful death suit against the Utah-based medevac company and the plane manufacturer a few days before the two-year anniversary. But his attorney says that was to preserve his client's rights before a two-year statute of limitations expired. He said his client hasn't decided whether to go forward with the suit, which has been moved to federal court. A Guardian flight representative says it's received the lawsuit but has no comment. Golden Valley Electric Association is seeking renewable energy proposals. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, GVEA aims to reduce greenhouse gas emissions while maintaining reliability and without increasing the cost of power.
Golden Valley generates nearly 90% of its electricity with diesel, coal, and other fossil fuels. But now the utility is exploring cleaner and greener ways to generate power with renewable energy sources like wind and solar.
We recognize that the CO2 emissions are problematic in our environment and that we want to make sure that we do everything we can to reduce those.
That's former Golden Valley President and CEO Corey Borgeson talking 2 years ago about the carbon reduction goal the utility's board of directors had just adopted. That was one of several objectives in a 2018 plan that also included a study of the utility's aging Healy 1 power plant and what to do about it when it reaches the end of its useful life. Those are among the top reasons that Golden Valley last month issued an invitation for proposals on electrical generating facilities powered by renewable energy sources.
One of our strategic objectives this year is to work on a generation plan and what the future generation is going to look like.
Golden Valley's Acting Member Services Director Abby Dillard says the request for information or RFI that calls for renewable power proposals requires the systems to contribute to the utility's carbon reduction goal while complying with its longtime imperative to produce electricity reliably and at the lowest possible cost.
We are very interested in renewable projects as long as the cost makes sense for our members.
The RFI calls for proposals on renewable power facilities that would produce 15 to 30 megawatts, for which Golden Valley will pay 9 cents a kilowatt hour. Golden Valley senior engineer Nathan Minima says soliciting renewable energy proposals could help the utility realize new ways to generate power cost effectively with few or no emissions.
So that we could, you know, evaluate different proposals and see which one would be most beneficial to us, and also kind of open the door to see what other options may be out there.
Minima says some of those ideas could be integrated into the power generation plan that the 2018 strategic directives also called for. That plan will, among other things, consider whether Golden Valley should upgrade the 54-year-old Healy 1 power plant with costly emission controls, including a selective catalytic reduction unit, or SCR, or shut down the 25-megawatt coal-fired power plant and replace it with another power source. Dillard says the utilities board must make that decision next year.
By the end of 2022, we would need to notify whether we are going to elect to retire Healy Unit 1 or install an SCR. And then if we were planning to retire, we would need to shut down the plant by December 31st, 2024.
Minima says the renewable power systems that Golden Valley will be considering wouldn't replace Healy 1, but he says the new power source would augment Golden Valley's mix of electrical generating facilities.
We're going to be considering those projects in light of our generation strategic planning, and that includes Healy 1 retirement. That includes potential capital upgrades on existing generation units.
Dillard says the renewable power proposals must be submitted to Golden Valley no later than April 30th, and she says the RFI requires the system the utility selects to be operational by 2025. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
The state announced 185 new Alaska resident COVID-19 cases Friday. The Department of Health and Social Services says the cases reported Thursday included 59 in Anchorage, 38 in Wasilla, and 18 in Fairbanks. Elsewhere in the interior region, the Yukon-Koyukuk census area had 3 new cases and North Pole 1. Additionally, there were 25 new non-resident cases statewide, including 1 in Fairbanks. Alaska's new case rate continues to decline, and as of Thursday, the average daily case rate over the previous 14 days was 17.4 per 100,000 people. There were no new virus deaths or hospitalizations reported Thursday, but 34 people were in Alaska hospitals for COVID, including 4 on ventilators. A DHSS report due out by noon today will cover new case and other data reported Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Colder than normal temperatures are forecast to give way across the interior. National Weather Service meteorologist Jim Brader says high pressure that's pushed overnight low temperatures into the 30s below zero will be displaced by low pressure systems moving in from the west.
It looks like we're getting into a more sort of transitory pattern that's a little more moist and not quite as cold.
Brader says snow is expected tomorrow and then again Wednesday into Thursday. I'm Dan Bross.